Thank you, my brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and us in the universe family of God, for listening to my podcast, Personal God Consciousness in Jesus and Living Eternal Truths. I am Brother Dave, your host. Please visit my large website, www.purechristians.org, or ledbyjesus.org, same website. You'll find many valuable and comprehensive religious and spiritual resources there. When you get there, scroll about 25% down the homepage, and then you may read, download, and share my always free 100-page PDF of key highlights of my books on the nature, life, and teachings of our Creator, Son of God, and Son of Man, Jesus Christ. If any here wish to receive by email a free copy of the text on our show, comment, ask questions, or receive more free text, just email me, dave@purechristians.org. Freely we have received truth in God's Spirit. Freely we love to share His truth. We hope and pray that you do too. We thank you, our brothers and sisters in the perfecting family of God, of all mankind here on earth. We thank you all for listening. Thank you for your spiritual support. We thank you for sharing gems of truth with others. We have selected verses and paragraphs on this topic from the Christian Bible and from the unique 2,097-page Fifth Epical Revelation of Truth, which is named the Urantia Book. That revelation was given around AD 1935. It's in modern American English, and it allows our seeking minds and souls much joy and enthusiasm as we read these powerful verses. All reflective truth-seeking humans on this planet will find some value from these readings. It's freely available online. There's no copyright because only humans can hold a copyright, and this revelation was given by superhumans, so it's fully in the public domain, and so it allows us to then share portions of it wisely with others. Now I will continue with my topical study 132, True and False Liberty and Freedom on All Levels, Part 6. Now this is from the Urantia book, which is free to use in the public domain. Paper 81, Development of Modern Civilization, Section 2, The Tools of Civilization, Paragraph 14. A savage is a slave to nature, but scientific civilization is slowly conferring increasing liberty on mankind. That includes men and women equally. Through animals, fire, wind, water, electricity, and other undiscovered sources of energy, man has liberated and will continue to liberate himself from the necessity of unremitting toil. I add, today, our scientists only recognize four primal forces of energy: strong nuclear, weak nuclear, electromagnetic, and local linear gravity, not paradise elliptical gravity. Thus, there are 23 other primal energy forces yet to be discovered. Now they suspect a fifth energy force and continue the search. Search online New Physics to see the latest research. The false Big Bang theory is now being rejected, along with some of Einstein's incorrect theories. Now back to the text. Regardless of the transient trouble produced by the prolific invention of machinery, the ultimate benefits to be derived from such mechanical inventions are inestimable. Civilization can never flourish, much less be established, unless man has leisure to think, to plan, to imagine new and better ways of doing things. We do have our God-given creative imagination to utilize. Section 5, Cultural Society, Paragraph 3. But cultural society is no great and beneficent club of inherited privilege into which all men are born with free membership and entire equality. Rather, is it an exalted and ever-advancing guild of earth workers, admitting to its ranks only the nobility of those toilers who strive to make the world a better place in which their children and their children's children may live and advance in subsequent ages. This guild of civilization extracts costly admission fees, imposes strict and rigorous disciplines, visits heavy penalties on all dissenters and nonconformists. While it confers few personal licenses or privileges except those of enhanced security against common dangers and racial perils. Paragraph 4. Social association is a form of survival insurance which human beings have learned is profitable. Therefore, are most individuals willing to pay those premiums of self-sacrifice and personal liberty curtailment which society exacts from its members in return for this enhanced group protection? In short,
The present-day social mechanism is a trial-and-error insurance plan designed to afford some degree of assurance and protection against a return to the terrible and antisocial conditions which characterize the early experiences of the human race. Paragraph 5. Society thus becomes a cooperative scheme for securing civil freedom through institutions, economic freedom through capital and invention. I state, capitalism works well. Never the disastrous failures of godless communism or foolish socialism. Continuing on, social liberty through culture and freedom from violence through police regulation. I add, justice, law, and order must be maintained and improved. Paragraph 7. Liberty subject to group regulation is a legitimate goal of social evolution. Liberty without restrictions is the vain and fanciful dream of unstable and flighty human minds. I add, that would be the chaos of anarchy. We would have murder, torture, rape, theft, and all other sins and evils that would be allowed in so doing. Paper 82, The Evolution of Marriage. Now, a very high paradise level primary supernatum down here in charge of all seraphim angels, our guardian angels, she gave us these important papers, 82, 83, 84, on marriage and family. So here we are, paper 82, section 1, the mating instinct. Paragraph 2. Sex interest and desire were not dominating passions in primitive peoples. They simply took them for granted. The entire reproductive experience was free from imaginative embellishment. The all-absorbing sex passion of the more highly civilized peoples is chiefly due to race mixtures, especially where the evolutionary nature has been stimulated by the associative imagination and beauty appreciation of the notites and animites. That's the Adam and Eve blood we have to some small degree. But the andite inheritance was absorbed by the evolutionary races in such limited amounts as to fail to provide sufficient self-control for the animal passions thus quickened and aroused by the endowment of keener sex consciousness and stronger mating urges. Of the six original evolutionary races, the red man had the highest sex code. Now, to review, about 38,000 years ago, God saw that human progress was starting to stall out, and so Jesus, who is our local universe creator father, he sent down from one of the higher heavens Adam and Eve pair that were made to be able to mate with humans. And they had superior genes, far superior to what we have. And the plan was to have Adam and Eve stay in their first original Garden of Eden and procreate 1 million pure-line Adamic children before they went out to mate with selected human specimens. But Adam and Eve were deceived partly by Lucifer, Satan, and Caligastia, fallen beings that Jesus now has removed. They induced Eve and then Adam to become impatient and try to go out and do it their way, a faster way, knowing that that would mess things up. And Adam and Eve, of course, didn't know that. So they went out too soon. If they had stayed about 250 years longer in the garden, they would have had 1 million pure-line children. Now, inbreeding then was not a problem because they didn't have any human defects, so they could inbreed all they wanted to and be no problem. But they went out too soon with only about 1,500 pure-line Adam and Eve-type progeny. So we only have a small percentage of this higher superior genes. But those genes are dominant. So over the years, centuries, they will dominate and give us finally the ability, as Adam and Eve had, to live 400 or 500 years here, disease-free, much higher IQs, maybe in the range of 500 to 1,000, I imagine. And they were tall, strong. They were 8 feet tall. And humans today are only about 5.5 to 6 feet tall. You can see all the advantages. And also, we would have extra senses. We would have ability to read minds at great distances and things like that. Few people have a slight mind-reading capability, but very slight. It's quite rare. Okay, going on, paragraph 7. The mating instinct is one of the dominant physical driving forces of human beings. It is the one emotion which, in the guise of individual gratification, effectively tricks selfish man or selfish woman and to putting race welfare and perpetuation high above individual ease and personal freedom from responsibility. I state, some selfish, defective humans have no desire to procreate and then raise their own children as the sons of God in truth that they each are. In the future, these defectives will not be a part of the ever-improving worldwide human gene pool. Section 2, The Restrictive Taboos, Paragraph 3. Free love, however, has never been in good standing above the scale of rank savagery. The moment societal groups began to form, marriage codes and marital restrictions began to develop. Mating has thus progressed through a multitude of transitions from a state of almost complete sex license to the 20th century standards of relatively complete sex restriction. I add, the Revelator stated that around A.D. 1934-1935. Now, in years 1955 up to now 2021, sexual morality has drastically declined to the detriment of society. Soon, moral sexual standards will improve as the majority of humans see the terrible consequences of unrestricted sex, hedonism, selfishness, and early deaths from increasing venereal diseases. Paragraph 5. Women have always been subject to more restricted taboos than men. The early mores granted the same degree of sex liberty to unmarried women as to men, but it has always been required of wives that they be faithful to their husbands. Primitive marriage did not much curtail men's sexual liberties, but it did render further sex license taboo to the wife. Married women have always borne some mark which set them apart as a class by themselves, such as hairdress, clothing, veil, seclusion, ornamentation, and rings. Section 3, Early Marriage Mores, Paragraph 15. These primitive trial marriages were entirely free from all semblance of license. They were simply sincere tests of fecundity, and fecundity means the abundant procreation of children. When modern couples marry, with the thought of convenient divorce in the background of their minds, if they are not wholly pleased with their married life, they are, in reality, entering upon a form of trial marriage, and one that is far beneath the status of the honest adventures of the less civilized ancestors. I state, today in the USA and in Europe, divorces are declining. Is that good? You'd think it would be, maybe. No. Because less couples now desire to ever marry. They just prefer to shack up together, usually short-term, and see if that feels good. Section 5, Endogamy and Exogamy, and that's marriage within the tribe and outmarriage. Paragraph 6, outmarriage finally dominated because it was favored by the man. To get a wife from the outside ensured greater freedom from in-laws. Familiarity bleeds contempt, so as the element of individual choice began to dominate mating, it became the custom to choose partners from outside the tribe. Grass is greener on the other side of the fence or whatever. Paper 83, The Marriage Institution, Section 2, Paragraph 1. Primitive marriages were always planned by the parents of the boy and girl. The transition stage between this custom and the times of free choosing was occupied by the marriage broker or professional matchmaker. These matchmakers were at first the barbers, later the priest. The barber, they did a lot of things. They did surgery, too. Marriage was originally a group affair, than a family matter. Only recently has it become an individual adventure, or disaster. Paragraph 4. Woman was long denied full freedom of self-disposal in marriage, but the more intelligent women have always been able to circumvent this restriction by the clever exercise of their wits. Man has usually taken the lead in courtship, but not always. Woman, sometimes formally as well as covertly, initiates marriage. And as civilization has progressed, women have had an increasing part in all phases of courtship and marriage. Section 7, The Dissolution of Wedlock, Paragraph 4. The social pressure of community standing and property privileges has always been potent in the maintenance of the marriage taboos and mores. Down through the ages, marriage has made steady progress and stands on advanced ground in the modern world, notwithstanding that it is threateningly assailed by widespread dissatisfaction among those peoples where individual choice a new liberty figures most largely. While these upheavals of adjustment appear among the more progressive races as a result of suddenly accelerated social evolution, among the less advanced peoples, marriage continues to thrive and slowly improve under the guidance of the older mores. Possibly related to that now, some people think that Christianity is declining worldwide. Well, maybe for 10, 20 years back it did a little bit. But now, for the last 20 or more years, Christianity is improving, increasing worldwide in the non-Western and non-USA countries. The USA is more secular and less religious, possibly, and so is Western Europe. But much of the rest of the world is getting more and more oriented toward seeking spiritual truth and learning the gospel of Jesus. Christianity is growing rapidly in Asia, Japan, and China, the Middle East, the Muslim countries, Iran, Iraq. They're becoming Christian. Now, this is not advertised too much because the leaders, tyrants that run Iran and Iraq and some of these other Muslim countries, they don't know that Christianity is done in private in small homes where they have small home fellowships, study groups, and they pray, they read the Bible. Some are reading the Urantia book. And so in, 20 years or less, you're going to see a revolution. They'll kick out the dictator leaders, and they'll become more Christian. That's great. You don't hear that advertised too much, mainly because I guess it's unknown. Paragraph 7, the high degree of imagination and fantastic romance entering into courtship is largely responsible for the increasing divorce tendencies among modern Occidental peoples. That's 1935 to 1960, maybe, then refusing to legally marry and just shacking up, all of which is further complicated by women's greater personal freedom and increased economic liberty. Easy divorce, when the result of lack of self-control or failure of normal personality adjustment, only leads directly back to those crude societal stages from which man has emerged so recently and as a result of so much personal anguish and racial suffering. Paper 84, Marriage and Family Life. Section 1, Primitive Peer Associations. Paragraph 1. Marriage was not founded on sex relations. They were incidental thereto. Marriage was not needed by primitive man, who indulged his sex appetite freely without encumbering himself with the responsibilities of wife, children, and home. Section 3, The Family Under Father Dominance. Paragraph 7. Woman has always had to work, at least right up to modern times. The female has been a real producer. Man has usually chosen the easier path, and this inequality has existed throughout the entire history of the human race. Woman has always been the burden bearer, carrying the family property and tending the children, thus leaving the man's hands free for fighting or hunting. Of course, now we don't have to do that so much, so now there's a little more equality. However, I want to add, it's good to have social equality and spiritual equality. We're all spiritually equal according to God the Father. But this idea of unisex, that males and females are totally interchangeable, a female can do a man's work, or a man can do a female's work, woman's work, it's not going to work. It's a total failure. God has made men and women not only different in this first life, but forever. As we ascend in soul and in spiritual forms, there's a male attitude that remains with it, even if we're a spirit light. There'll be a male attitude spirit light, and there'll be a female attitude spirit light, even all the way up in paradise. And on paradise, men and women will prefer to work together as teams rather than two men working or two women working. And here on earth, and all the way up into paradise, it's more effective, more efficient to have a man and a woman than two men or two women. They're far more capable that way. Okay, let's go on to Section 4, Woman's Status in Early Society, Paragraph 10. A great advance was made when a man was denied the right to kill his wife at will. Isn't that terrible? Up until recently, especially back in Jesus' time, a man didn't like his wife, he could kill her. Likewise, it was a forward step when a woman could own the wedding gifts. Later, she gained the legal right to own, control, and even dispose of property, but she was long deprived of the right to hold office in either church or state. Woman has always been treated more or less as property, right up to and in the 20th century after Christ. She has not yet gained worldwide freedom from seclusion under man's control. Even among advanced peoples, man's attempt to protect woman has always been a tacit assertion of superiority. Section 5, Woman Under the Developing Mores. Paragraph 7. Science, not religion, really emancipated women. It was the modern factory which largely set her free from the confines of the home. Man's physical abilities became no longer a vital essential in the new maintenance mechanism. Science so changed the conditions of living that manpower was no longer so superior to woman power. Now we have machines that can do much more than 100 or 1,000 men or women. Paragraph 8. These changes have tended towards woman's liberation from domestic slavery and have brought about such modification of her status that she now enjoys a degree of personal liberty and sex determination that practically equals man's. Once a woman's value consisted in her food-producing ability, but invention and wealth have enabled her to create a new world in which to function, spheres of grace and charm. Thus has industry won its unconscious and unintended fight for women's social and economic emancipation. And again, has evolution succeeded in doing what even revelation failed to accomplish? Section 7, The Ideals of Family Life, paragraph 29. Human society would be greatly improved if the civilized races would more generally return to the family council practices of the Andites. They did not maintain the patriarchal or autocratic form of family government. They were very brotherly and associative, freely and frankly discussing every proposal and regulation of a family nature. They were ideally fraternal in all their family government. In an ideal family, filial and parental affection are both augmented by fraternal devotion. Section 8, Dangers of Self-Gratification. Now this is very, very important. Paragraph 4, this is on page 942 in the Urantia book. There is real danger in the combination of restlessness, curiosity, adventure, and pleasure-abandoned characteristic of the post-Andite races, after about 35,000 years ago. The hunger of the soul cannot be satisfied with physical pleasures. The love of home and children is not augmented by the unwise pursuit of pleasure. Though you exhaust the resources of art, color, sound, rhythm, music, and adornment of person, you cannot hope thereby to elevate the soul or to nourish the spirit. Vanity and fashion cannot minister to home building and child culture. Pride and rivalry are powerless to enhance the survival qualities of succeeding generations. Paragraph 5. Advancing celestial beings all enjoy rest in the ministry of the reversion directors. Those are spirit beings that do higher true humor, not the low-level humor garbage that we hear down here, where they try to put people down and they use swear words. Pretty sick. Back when I was younger, in the 1940s and 1950s, humor was a lot cleaner. And after 1955, it started going downhill. Reading on, all efforts to obtain wholesome diversion and to engage in uplifting play are sound. Refreshing sleep, rest, recreation, and all pastimes which prevent the boredom of monotony are worthwhile. Competitive games, storytelling, and even the taste of good food may serve as forms of self-gratification. They add here, as a note, when you use salt to savor food, pause to consider that, for almost a million years, man, and men or women, could obtain salt only by dipping his food in ashes. And they said a million years because mankind, humans, have been here on this planet for just under 1 million years. Now we get to paragraph 6, which is very important. Please do share this widely. Let man enjoy himself. Let the human race find pleasure in 1,001 ways. Let evolutionary mankind explore all forms of legitimate self-gratification, the fruits of the long upward biological struggle. Man has well earned some of his present-day joys and pleasures, but look you well to the goal of destiny. Pleasures are indeed suicidal if they succeed in destroying property, in other words, capitalism, which has become the institution of self-maintenance. And self-gratifications have indeed cost a fatal price if they bring about the collapse of marriage, the decadence of family life, and the destruction of the home, man's supreme evolutionary acquirement, and civilization's only hope of survival. If the normal nuclear family is destroyed, even partly destroyed, the civilization will collapse. There is no survival unless we have solid, stable families. There is so much of the crime and confusion today on this planet is that children are now raised by just one parent, usually a single mother. They don't have the dad, or they don't know who the dad is. And the mother has to go work sometimes two or three part-time jobs to survive and feed the kids. What do the kids do when they're home, especially now with COVID? They're free to go out and join a street gang. So they get their learning from the street gangs. And they sell drugs and they do terrible things. That's destruction of society, very much. We have to stop it. It's all based on the solid home-family relationship. Now, this paper, you might be curious as to who gave this paper. These three papers, 82, 83, and 84, and later two papers on angels, were given by the chief of Seraphim stationed on Urantia. Who is this chief of Seraphim? Please know that she is a very high paradise-level primary Supernaphim, a super angel now working here on Earth. She is in charge of billions of our Seraphim guardian angels. And they have, I think, 12 different divisions, and home and family is one. They have religious, and they have science, health. They have 12 divisions of angels all trying to help us. She's in charge of all of those. Okay, that's enough for this part 6, and then in 2 weeks or less, I will present part 7. Rather than saying goodbye, I prefer to say farewell, do well. Thank you.